The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Okay, here's some headlines for you. This is all breaking news since about 12:30, 1 o'clock today. From Fox News, this would be expected, right? Supreme Court abortion case justices grill lawyers on precedent, fetal viability, constitutional rights. That's Fox News. From Bloomberg, Supreme Court justices suggest sweeping pullback on abortion. From CNBC, Supreme Court conservatives look ready to gut Roe versus Wade during arguments in Mississippi abortion case. And listen to this one. This is from CNN. Supreme Court conservatives lean towards limiting abortion rights after dramatic oral arguments on Mississippi law banning abortions after 15 weeks. And then there's this, Jeffrey Toobin, this is one of the analysts on CNN, a legal analyst, asserted the arguments overall for the pro-abortion case were, to put it lightly, a complete failure. Quote, this is Jeffrey Toobin at CNN, quote, if you believe that women should have the right to choose abortion, today's Supreme Court argument was a wall-to-wall disaster, unquote. Jeffrey Toobin, legal analyst at CNN, of all places. So if you were not aware, wow. We talked about it yesterday and talked about praying for it. Today, I listened to the vast majority of it myself and could be one of the most consequential abortion hearings we've had in decades, really. Here in the United States of America, Tammy Fitzgerald, the executive director of North Carolina Values Coalition, ncvalues.org, longtime friend, legal expert. Tammy, how are you?
Good, good. Thank you for having me on today, Steve.
You're welcome. So those are some pretty aggressive headlines, and I know that you're well aware of this and are paying attention. What's your just kind of right off the cuff reaction to what you heard today with the Supreme Court arguments back and forth?
Well, I thought it was positive. I mean, it gave me reason to hope that they might start to erode the foundation of Roe. I don't know if they'll go as far as repealing Roe and Casey, but I do think that based on what we saw today and heard, that the justices are poised to make some major alterations to abortion jurisprudence in our country.
Were you surprised that they took this in the first place?
I was shocked. I mean, basically, we didn't think they would take a 15-week abortion ban, and that's what this law is in Mississippi. It bans abortion after 15 weeks, and we sort of thought they would take one based on eugenics, like the bill that we passed in North Carolina, but Governor Cooper vetoed, the Human Life Non-Discrimination Act. We thought a bill like that was more likely to be the first case the Supreme Court took where they might erode the foundation of Roe. Because once the viability standard is eroded, you know, then you're left with the proposition that if it's not right to abort a baby up to the point of viability, then it's never right.
Right.
And so we felt like it would be a two-step process. And when I say we, I'm talking not just about myself, but other organizations in the pro-life movement from across the country.
Yeah, because ultimately, this is from another website looking at three most likely scenarios. One would be uphold America's constitutionally protected right to obtain an abortion, but decide that right is much narrower than we previously thought. Point number two, or the court could simply decide Roe was wrongly decided and the Constitution does not protect a woman's right to choose. That would chuck the whole thing. Or number three, could also decide the law violates the current Roe and Casey framework, which we're going to talk about, and strike it down, in effect acknowledging it shouldn't have taken the case at all. That's my question. Why would they take it at all if they weren't willing to do something?
Exactly. And that is the supposition, that they're willing to do something. And that's why they took the case.
And so what were kind of some of the standout things that you heard going through the case today?
Well, one at the very beginning of the oral arguments, Justice Thomas asked Scott Stewart, who's in the Attorney General's office, and he's who argued the case for the pro-life side. He asked him, he said, did you make the statement that abortion is the only constitutional right that involves killing someone else, killing another human being? And, you know, that really is the crux of the whole argument, isn't it? That none of our other constitutional rights involve killing someone, but abortion does. And, of course, Scott Stewart acknowledged, yes, that's exactly the argument we're making. One of the things that I thought was interesting was immediately Justice Breyer brought up stare decisis, which is a principle in law that says the court must follow its prior precedent, meaning if they've decided a case one way already, they have to follow that precedent in future cases. And that's what's been happening since 1973 when Roe was decided wrongly because there's some structural deficiencies in the opinion, but they just kept affirming it through subsequent opinions through stare decisis. And so Breyer brought that up and he said, what stare decisis principles should we apply when we're considering overturning a case like Roe? And so even Justice Breyer, I think, has some thought in his mind that maybe Roe was decided wrongly. And so he was asking, what are the principles? And he made the statement that the court should not base such a decision on, it shouldn't be political. And just because new justices have joined the court doesn't mean that it should all of a sudden come up for a decision about whether we should overturn Roe.
Right, right.
And so he said that would subvert the court's legitimacy. And he quoted a previous precedent about how do you overturn a precedent. And so he said that Scott Stewart said, which is the attorney for the pro-life side, that if they overturned Roe, it would return the issue to the states, to the people.
Right.
And so, you know, and Justice, Kavanaugh, who made the point that the state of Mississippi is not asking for the court to make abortion illegal. They're asking the court to just be neutral on the issue of abortion because the Constitution does not address abortion. And that would give it back to the states.
Right, back to the states, which unfortunately for a lot of people in the pro-life movement, we wouldn't want to stop there, but that would be a good move forward. It would return it to the states. And then, of course, we can pretty much go down the line and look at what states would say yes to abortion and no to abortion, which is kind of what we did prior to Obergefell in 2014 when states dealt with the marriage issue. This is Steve Noble with Tammy Fitzgerald. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Merry Christmas to you and your family. Talking about the Supreme Court case that was heard today. This is one of the biggest Supreme Court cases on the issue of abortion that we've seen really in a couple of decades here. So we're trying to unpack it and understand it. We've got Tammy Fitzgerald with us, the executive director of North Carolina Values Coalition, ncvalues.org. They also put an amicus brief in basically a memorandum to the court, an opinion to the court. So I want to talk about that. But we were talking about during the break, which just our friends on Facebook Live and YouTube Live, we continue to talk a little bit, kind of a sidebar conversation during the commercial break. If you're on radio wondering what's happening during a commercial break, that's what's going on. But talking about how frustrating it can be that I listened for about an hour and a half today, Tammy, and over 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 again from the pro-choice crowd, it's all about the autonomy of the woman, the mom, her career, her health. It's difficult to carry a baby. It's difficult to make the decision, yada, yada, yada. Nobody ever stands up really in these cases to defend the child. And Kavanaugh talked about that, talking about, hey, listen, there's two interests at stake here. One interest has to prevail over the other. Oh, yeah, the other interest being the child. And that's so frustrating. Why doesn't that become? And then I want to get to the brief you guys put into the case. But why doesn't that come up? Because that for those of us that don't understand the legalities of the argument, because you have to contain the discussion in front of the Supreme Court to the legal issues involved in the case that they're reviewing. You can't just go philosophically all over the place. You're not in there to grandstand because they'll shut you down. But why doesn't that show up? Why don't we have more of a conversation about the reality that we're talking about a human being? Because nowhere does the Constitution guarantee one American citizen's right to kill another.
Well, that's the argument the left wants to keep away from the public, because it puts full focus on the fact that there is a baby, and so they don't want to talk about it, as you saw today in the arguments before the Supreme Court. But yeah, I agree with you.
Super
we should
frustrating.
Be talking about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's super frustrating. So tell us about the brief that you guys submitted up to the Supreme Court on this particular issue.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. We did file a brief, a friend of the court brief, and these are important briefs because the parties are limited to certain page numbers that they can file in their briefs. And so this allows the court to hear other arguments that maybe the main parties to the case didn't have time to develop in their arguments. But the first argument we made was that the right to decide whether or not to bear a child presupposes there is, in fact, a child developing
yes.
in the womb. So it's kind of a logical fallacy to say, you know, there's not a child when the whole argument presupposes there is a child. Then the second argument we made is that the strict viability line is no longer valid. It's just not viable, so to speak. That viability is an arbitrary line that really doesn't have any justification in the Constitution, and that it was judicially crafted as a right to abort a child pre-viability, and that conflicts with other rights in the law where protection does not hinge on viability, like the right to inherit property in property rights. And then we talked about how developments in medical technology render viability obsolete.
Right.
Because in the last 50 years, we've developed the 3D and the 4D ultrasound. We have all kinds of prenatal tests now that show that unborn children can actually feel pain even before viability. And we can see that at 15 weeks, they have a heartbeat, they have fingers and toes and eyes, and they're humans. You know, this is the biggest human rights issue of our time,
yeah.
is whether abortion should be legal or not. And finally, we talked about the fact that the court should not act as the nation's ex officio medical board. In other words, every case that comes before the court, they're deciding medical issues because they have to, with the standard that they've set up on viability and access. Undue burden is the standard. And so really that the court has to continually make decisions that they're not qualified to make and that are not judicial decisions, but legislative. And then our final argument was about women, because, you know, in Casey, I believe the court said that women needed abortion so they could succeed and further themselves in life. And this is a fallacy because women don't need unfettered access to abortion to achieve equal citizenship.
Right.
I'm example A of that. You know, there are lots of women in the world who have made it without abortion. And so a number of us, I think over 300 of us who are professional women, signed on to a brief stating that, you know, we're women and we don't need abortion to have access to equal citizenship in America.
Yeah, which is such a great point. And that's why they say, you know, it pregnancy ruins your life. That's essentially what the message was, part of the message coming from the pro-choice crowd, is that you can't
yeah.
remove a woman's right to deal with trying to advance her own cause. Again, nowhere in the Constitution does it give you the right to kill another human being to advance your own cause. People go, well, what about the Second Amendment? That's the right to keep and bear arms. That's not the right to utilize the arms to murder another person in order to advance your own cause. It's just preposterous. They kept talking about the undue burden a lot. What did they mean by that, Tammy? Help us all understand. When they talk about undue burden with respect to this case, what were they referencing?
Well, you know, through the years, state courts have passed state laws that restrict abortion. And North Carolina has done a number of those in the last 10 years. And so that cuts down on the number of abortions done, but we can never truly legalize make abortion illegal in a state because of Roe versus Wade. But the Supreme Court has said we can restrict abortion. But the test they've applied to that is that any restrictions on abortion cannot create an undue burden on a woman's access to
abortion. On the mom, right.
And so that is a Supreme Court standard for how they judge. And, of course, it's completely arbitrary they make judgments. You know, it's just really completely arbitrary. Like in North Carolina, we passed a law that said that the ultrasound they do before a woman has an abortion, which they have been doing since the beginning in North Carolina, because they have to do one to determine what age the unborn child is, which determines
the price.
Because they have to determine, is this child viable or unviable?
Right.
So that the abortion is legal. So they're already doing these ultrasounds. And this law just said the doctor who performs the ultrasound has to offer the woman an opportunity to see her unborn child on the screen when they do the ultrasound. And that was struck down by the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals because of an undue burden.
It might force the mom to look at the baby. That's an undue burden, right.
But it wasn't even forcing the mom to look at it.
Right.
It was just offering just her the opportunity.
Jeez.
So courts have applied that standard any way they want to come out to the result they're seeking.
What do you think's going to happen? We got about 30 seconds left.
Well, this is my prediction, that they are going to uphold the Mississippi law, but not strike down Roe v. Wade. And so then we'll have another case. The Texas case will go before the court, and that gives them another opportunity to strike down Roe.
Yeah, edging down on the length of the pregnancy to be able to get an abortion. So it's moving in the right direction. Tammy Fitzgerald, NC Values Coalition, ncvalues.org. Thank you, sister, as always, for your help. It's been great.
Thank you, Steve.
You're welcome. We'll talk to you later. We'll be right back. Here we go. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you today. Continuing to unpack what was going on up at the Supreme Court today. About an hour and 45 minutes, a little longer than normal. They usually contain it to an hour and a half. But if you were paying attention this morning, even last night, there were people gathering outside the Supreme Court building up there in Washington, D.C., which is right across the street from Congress. If you've ever been up there, if you haven't, you need to get up there. It's something you need to see and experience Washington, D.C. It's really an amazing place, in both a good and a bad way. But I had several friends up there that were part of the just to be present and to be prayerful. And one of them, of course, our good friend has been on the show many times. Chad Slotta was up there. Chad, thanks for calling in, buddy. How are you?
Hey, thanks so much for having me, Steve. It's great to be on the show.
You're welcome, and thank you for your willingness to do so. So, first of all, tell me why you and your bride ventured up there, and then tell me what it was like to be there today.
Yeah, so we were just so honored, Steve, to come up and just to be a presence, as you said, and to be prayerful, as the Supreme Court was literally hearing oral arguments on a case that was once in a three-generation opportunity, to save unborn children. 60+ million, you probably have already mentioned on the show today, 60+ million babies have lost their lives through abortion. We just wanted to be here just to pray, to ask God for wisdom, for truth, for justice to be done, to pray for moms who are in the most difficult situations with pregnancies. And so just so neat to be here, so wonderful to see so many, literally thousands of Americans coming, being so prayerful, worshiping, certainly a lot of emotion on both sides as we were standing directly in front of the Supreme Court for quite a while. I can tell you that there was a lot of emotion on both sides, especially on those who seemed to be advocating for abortion. But didn't see any violence and, certainly a lot of police presence. So security did a great job as well. It was wonderful to be here.
Was it ugly at all, just verbally?
Well, I certainly did hear some of that. Some of the signs I wouldn't want to read on the air.
Kind of like some of the stuff that you're finding in the school system.
Yeah, exactly. I know.
We'd get in trouble with the FCC if you read it on the air.
I'm trying not to get you in trouble, but yeah.
No. Oh no, please! I love trouble.
It was disheartening, to be honest, to read some of the signs, at least coming from a pro-life perspective, some of the signs that, you know, talking about abortion being essential and just some other phrases that I, you know, again, from my perspective as a Christian believer, and knowing the difficulty, the challenge, the pain that abortion causes so many women, that it was hard to see and watch, but again, a huge honor to be here with everyone and to be part of the prayer process.
Yeah, and there were some protesters there, some pro-choice people. I saw this story earlier today that probably wasn't actually happening, but they were simulating. They were taking pills, allegedly taking abortion pills outside the Supreme Court. There's just some crazy stuff like that, and from a Christian biblical gospel perspective, I mean, oftentimes when you stand outside an abortion clinic to pray, we'll look at the people across the street or like the people you saw today, Chad. We're talking to Chad Slotta, who is up at outside the Supreme Court today, and go, you know, these people are blinded by the power of the prince of the air. They're blinded by the devil. They don't know what they're doing. But in fact, they're culpable. They do know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. But there is a lostness there. There's a shroud over their thinking as a result of their lostness and the operation of the devil. But how would you suggest, because Chad, by the way, everybody was a pastor for years, how do we kind of help us work through how we should look at these people? When we see these people out there simulating, taking an abortion pill and saying the things they say and putting up the pictures they put up, how should we respond to that if we're in Christ?
Well, that's a great question, and I think I'd first of all say that I think the protesters that we see and some of those ones that end up on someone's Twitter feed and get the news because of their outlandish behavior, I really don't think they represent most of the folks, honestly, who support abortion, for that matter. It was very interesting. There's a number of places that were broadcasting the oral arguments from within the chamber. Outside, there were a number of groups praying, worshiping, and very intently listening to the oral arguments that they were being given. And so I spent a good amount of time doing that as well, just sitting down and listening. And Justice Thomas in particular kept asking kind of a similar question. He just kind of said, what right are we defending here? Does the Constitution guarantee a right to an abortion? And to hear the argument that those who were, again, pro-abortion in the particular case, those who were making those arguments, to listen to them, I think it's really important as believers that we understand where they're coming from, because they do have what they believe to be sound logic as to why they're supporting abortion. I don't agree with their logic, but they believe they do. And then I was up here with a wonderful group called Human Coalition that's doing some amazing work around the country for taking care of moms and saving babies, and I can just tell you from listening to their stories, the moms that they deal with, I think the statistic that they shared with me, Steve, was that more than 70%, I think it was 76% of the moms that the Human Coalition in particular works with, actually, they would say if their circumstances were better or different, they would choose to carry their baby to term. So I think we need to remember, again, the protesters do not represent most folks. Yeah. They don't represent moms who are in crisis. They don't know what to do. And so we need to respond in love and grace with understanding. That doesn't mean we back off. It doesn't mean we compromise. But we certainly don't retaliate in kind.
Yeah, that's a great point. I was talking to Tammy Fitzgerald from NC Values Coalition, was on the first two segments, and we both made the point that nowhere in the Constitution is one American given the right constitutionally to eliminate the life of another American in order to advance their own cause, be it financially, it's going to ruin my career, I'm broke, I don't want to bring a child into the world. Nowhere in the Constitution is that guaranteed, and they twisted it and messed around with it. What was there? I was going to ask you, I assumed people were probably broadcasting the oral arguments. You can listen to this stuff, everybody, online. You can listen to it, actually, from the chamber. I was listening to it the whole time. Were people reacting based on what they heard? Was there some audience reaction to what was going on?
Well, over in front of the Supreme Court, the group that was there continued to grow throughout the day. We were there pretty early, around 8:30 this morning. Liberty University actually brought 21 fully loaded buses of students to come down and pray. So, you know, certainly as folks continued to show up, it got a little more raucous in front of the Supreme Court. I actually happened to be across the street on the side of the Supreme Court. As you're looking at it, it would be the right side where a group was, again, praying and worshiping. And that's where the arguments were being broadcast. And I can just tell you, folks were very contemplative and very prayerful. They weren't reacting negatively or positively. They were just seeking God, asking God for wisdom, calling out those justices' names, before the Lord and asking for truth. The one phrase that stuck out in the oral arguments, again, on the pro-abortion side that really broke my heart is this idea that women enduring a pregnancy.
Right.
And it was just again, I don't know everyone's situation. None of us do. But to hear that type of argument being made as to why we would continue with this practice, it was heartbreaking.
Yeah, it is heartbreaking, and that's the reason why setting aside what we do in the court, setting aside showing up to a situation like this to be prayerful and to be present, just the ministry of presence, we always have to remember everything ultimately is spiritual, that the only thing that's going to ultimately change the direction of any group, any person, any country is going to be the gospel itself, which is why we have to be kingdom-minded people. Operating in
that's
the
right.
world, yes, but kingdom-minded people always looking for an opportunity to get the gospel on the table, because that's the only thing that really changes a human heart.
I fully agree. You know, we're not going to the folks who support abortion, the folks who are against it, the reasons that we do that. We've talked about this on your show before. It's really a matter of worldview. Where do we come from? What does it mean to be human? Who made us? What's wrong with the world? How do we fix it? Why, as human beings, do we have value and worth? Why are we all equal? These are the questions that God's Word answers for us. These are the questions that cause us to stand strongly on the side of life and to see all men as created equal. That's what
right.
we believe as Christians. And so, when folks have a completely different worldview, we don't expect people who don't who aren't believers to necessarily behave or think like believers.
Sure, that's right.
And so again, it's the church's opportunity to continue, as you said, to share the gospel with love and grace everywhere we go.
Yeah, such a great point. Chad Slotta, thank you, my friend, for being there. Thanks for calling in and sharing with us today. I appreciate you and love you, my brother. I'll see you soon.
You too, my friend. Great to be on the show. Take care.
All right, pal. We'll talk soon. Thanks so much. And Chad's been on a lot recently because he and his wife are engaged in the public school system here in Wake County. That's a guy you need to pray for because the Lord very well may lift him up to run for office. He's a fantastic guy, a believer, former pastor, and just a little inside information. That's the type of person that's on our board. Chad's on my board for this ministry organization. He mentioned Human Coalition. Another one of my board members is with Human Coalition and like-minded people full of the Holy Spirit, trying to advance the cause of Christ and affect the country for the cause of our neighbors all at the same time. We're serious people doing some serious work. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back.
Oh, angels said from above, you know you make my world light up when I was down.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Merry Christmas to you and your family, your loved ones. I hope you have a wonderful Christmas season. And again, coming on the heels of what happened earlier today, I listened to the vast majority, about an hour and a half. It went about an hour and 45 minutes. They're usually capped in an hour and a half. And by the way, if you want to understand that the Supreme Court hears cases in the fall, then they shut down for a while as they're working through the cases. And then you'll start hearing some decisions come out, usually around May or June. So we won't know this one until June of next year. That's 6 months, 6.5 months from now. And so we need to remain prayerful. I want to go through the actual names and what I think we need to be praying for each one of these Supreme Court justices, because it's different for all of them. This is not a slam dunk by any stretch of the imagination. But the fact that they took it at all is a big deal. Okay. And so I want to work through that. And really, you can have three different things that happen here. This was from an article. I was sharing it with Tammy Fitzgerald from the NC Values Coalition, ncvalues.org. If you're a Christian, you care about the country, you care about the nation, you care about the state from a Christian's engaging the political process, you should be involved with NC Values, if nothing less than to get their newsletters and emails. So go to ncvalues.org. They are on the front line.
down there working at the legislature and also at the federal level, because they put an amicus brief in with several different lines of argumentation on today's court case. So they're one of the few groups in North Carolina that are advocating for us as Christians and conservatives in the realm of politics and law. So go check them out, ncvalues.org. But three different things that could go on here. The court could decide once again to respect the essential holding of Roe, uphold Americans' constitutionally protected right to an abortion, but decide that right is much narrower than we previously thought. That they would be moving from this notion of viability, 22, 24 weeks, I think it's 24 weeks officially, down to the Mississippi law, which is you can't, they would restrict abortions to it's got to be under 15 weeks. Okay, so they're moving the line there, a quote unquote viability to this 15 week number. So they could do that, which would be a huge move in the right direction. The pro-choice crowd will go ballistic if they do that. That means they would basically uphold the Mississippi law. And then other states could go, okay, the Supreme Court just said that it's fine constitutionally to restrict abortion to 15 weeks or under. Okay, that would give other states some constitutional Supreme Court backbone, backing to go, okay, then we have a 20-week ban? No, we're going to move ours to 15 because the Supreme Court already said they already agreed with it. See what happens there? So then you can at least start to restrict more abortions. But the vast majority of abortions occur at about 10 to 12 weeks, all right? So you got to know the numbers, you got to know the facts. But they could do that. Number two, the court could simply decide Roe was wrongly decided and the Constitution does not protect a woman's right to choose. That's what I believe. Most of you do, too. This would bring us back to pre-Roe days and states would decide for themselves. So they would chuck Roe. That would be gone. Roe versus Wade would fall. And immediately, constitutionally, it would go back to the states, just like we did with the gay marriage stuff. And 31 states had enacted changes to their own state constitutions defining marriage as one man and one woman. And they won those on average of 61% of the vote, which is a pretty strong majority, okay? 31 states. So you had states that allowed gay marriage and states that didn't. If Roe falls, that's what would happen at first. I think it's a federal issue because you're depriving another person of a right to life, which is constitutionally protected. That's where when they're talking about equal application of the law, the 14th Amendment, and you can't apply the law differently for different people. Okay, that would include the people in the womb, right? This is just logic. Fourth, fifth, sixth grade logic. This doesn't take an advanced degree to understand this. So they could chuck Roe versus Wade, which would push it back to the states, or they could decide the law violates the current Roe and Casey framework and strike it down, in effect acknowledging it shouldn't have taken the case at all because the appellate court already said, oh, this is unconstitutional. That's how Mississippi got it to the Supreme Court. It got challenged in court by the pro-choice crowd. Then it gets to the appellate court, the federal appellate court, the appeals court, and they agreed with the pro-choicers and said, yeah, this has got to go. And then Mississippi appealed to the only place they can appeal, to the U.S. Supreme Court. But the Supreme Court does not have to take the case. They only take about 5% of the cases that get thrown at them every year. They're very selective. So why would they pick a case if they weren't somewhat willing? And I think you need three or four people in the Supreme Court to agree to take a case. If they're not willing to do anything, why would they take the case, right? So that's a big deal. I really like what Kavanaugh is the one that I think most effectively brought in the fact that we need to consider the baby, right? I know that's a shocking thought. This is from the Daily Wire. Kavanaugh made the point about why abortion is such a contentious issue in this country. Kavanaugh stated, quote, the other side says, though, that there are two interests at stake. So he's talking to the pro-abortion lawyer, okay? That there are two interests at stake. That there's also the interest in fetal life at stake as well. And in your brief, you say that the existing framework accommodates, that's your word, both the interest of the pregnant woman and the interest of the fetus. Really? And the problem, I think the other side would say, talking about the pro-lifers, and the reason this issue's hard is that you can't accommodate both interests. You have to pick. That's the fundamental problem. Roe versus Wade allows for the quote-unquote right of the mom to trump the quote-unquote right of the baby. The mom's allowed to have the life of her baby eliminated in order to advance her own cause for whatever reason she sees fit. Okay? So you can't protect the interests of both. Nobody's protecting the interests of the baby based on Roe versus Wade. He goes on, one interest has to prevail over the other at any given point in time. That's why this is so challenging, I think. And the question then becomes, what does the Constitution say about that? He said, asking what her reaction is to the other side's theme. He asks, when you have these two interests at stake, and both are important, as you acknowledge, why would this court be the arbiter rather than Congress? the state legislatures, state Supreme Courts, the people being able to resolve this. And there'll be different answers in Mississippi and New York, different answers in Alabama than California, because there are two different interests at stake, and the people in those states might value those interests somewhat differently. Why is that not the right answer? It's a good question, right? Preligar, that's one of the attorneys for the pro-choice side. Answer, Justice Kavanaugh. It's not the right answer because the court correctly recognized that this is a fundamental right of women, and the nature of fundamental rights is that it's not left up to state legislatures to decide whether to honor them or not. Okay, do you understand that? This is a woman's fundamental right to decide what to do with her body and therefore her future. It's a fundamental right of the woman. But again, what are they missing? What about the fundamental right of the baby? You have a human life in that womb that's going to be born here in America, so they should be protected by the Constitution, and full representation of the Constitution should protect them. So if we protect people from being murdered, that would be people inside the womb as well, right? That's a full and equal application of the law, which is what the Constitution guarantees. In this case, this is what Roe does. Who cares about the baby? It's a clump of cells, doesn't feel anything, voiceless, can't hire a lawyer, and so we can do whatever we want. That's autonomy. That's Romans chapter 1. So you have people that are given over to a depraved mind. They suppress the truth and replace it with a lie. That's why they changed the language. It's not an abortion. It's a woman's right to choose. It's woman's reproductive health care, woman's freedom, yada, yada, yada. And by the way, the other thing I mentioned, a particularly smart moment of mine, which is few and far between, I think, when they kept talking about, stare decisis, precedent. You know, we look back and we can't just willy-nilly overturn things that we've decided in the past. And that's largely true. Yeah, that's a legitimate legal concern. Stare decisis, precedent. Okay? Can't just willy-nilly flip all over the place based on a new justices coming in. That's why they were worried about politicizing it. But the question is, have they done it in the past? Yes. The Supreme Court has reversed itself in the past, and the most obvious one, short of reversing Roe versus Wade, was Plessy, which was in 1896. And then we reversed it with Brown versus Board of Education in 1951. That's a 52, 53-year shift. It took 52 or 53 years to overturn that. Should we have overturned it? Absolutely. Are you kidding me? Yeah, no doubt about it. So in 1896, Plessy versus Ferguson. Plessy challenged an 1890 Louisiana law that required separate train cars for black Americans. This is separate but equal, right? And white Americans in the case of Homer Adolph Plessy, plaintiff, versus Ferguson, judge of Section A, criminal district court for the parish of Orleans. The Supreme Court held that separate but equal facilities for white and black railroad passengers did not violate the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. What? That's so bogus. That's so wrong. It's ridiculous. 1896. But it took all the way to Brown versus the Board of Education, which was in 1951. And then eventually we got that right. A three-judge panel in August of 1951, the U.S. District Court unanimously held in the Brown versus Board of Education that no willful, intentional, or substantial discrimination should exist. That's where we got rid of Plessy. Separate but equal. So ask all the members of the Supreme Court, hey, how many of you are glad that we dumped Plessy and corrected that? Or the Dred Scott decision? How many of you are glad we corrected that? All of them. So then you would agree that there are times when we should correct ourselves from past decisions. Yes. Okay. Thank you very much. Have a nice day. Okay. We won't get an answer until June, so we need to pray. And I'll put this up on Facebook so you can go look at it. Okay. I'll do this sometime this evening. Keep praying for the members of the Supreme Court. You have Sotomayor and Kagan. That's basically a miracle. We need a Saul to Paul intervention by the Lord to change them. Sotomayor and Kagan. Breyer today, Justice Breyer, was particularly aggressive. And we should pray that God just breaks his spirit. Okay? Roberts, the Chief Justice, is iffy. He's all over the place, very political. Pray that the man grows a backbone. Pray for his resolve. Thomas and Alito, who are going to vote the right way, pray for their influence and their encouragement, but specifically their influence and encouragement towards Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett, the three most recent additions to the court. Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett. They need strength, they need courage, and we need to pray that Thomas, Justice Thomas and Justice Alito have great influence with them. And if they do, you don't need Roberts. You have 5-4, and you can start moving this country in the right direction when it comes to abortion. A big deal that we need to continue to pray for. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. We'll have Theology Thursday tomorrow, and like my dad always used to say, ever forward.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.